no action scheduled for this House. No.
Steny Hoyer.
Does the Majority Leader intend to therefore have the authority for the Export-Import Bank to expire, notwithstanding the Speaker's observation that it will cost thousands of jobs?
There is no action scheduled at this appropriate time.
The bank, which provides loans to help foreign buyers purchase U.S. goods, has long been a target of fiscal conservatives who consider it a form of corporate welfare.
That is SRN's Wally Hines reporting. Activists heckled Senator Marco Rubio during his speech at the Faith and Freedom Coalition conference in Washington yesterday. 14 minutes into his remarks to religious conservatives, a pair of activists stood up and started shouting. More details at SRNnews.com.
You may be right, I may be crazy.
Maybe right, I may be crazy. I just cut off Christine Jennings. Christine, you can call me right back. Someone's coming here and playing with all the buttons on my panel again today. But this is the Morning Edge, and I am Floyd J. Winters, and welcome to Dennis Mailey and Augie. Augie, you're live.
Well, I'm the host of the show somehow, and we're going to go on from here. But I think we got Christine calling in right now. She used to say a few things of what's happening with the Democratic Party in Sarasota County, and why she wants to turn it blue. Is she going to have to strangle every Democrat to make them all vote, or is what's going to really happen? I don't know. Is Christine, are you on the air here?
Good morning, Christine.
Okay.
Good morning, Christine.
We've got a full guest list in here with Dennis Mailey from the Braden Times online newspaper, and my great-granddaughter, not great-granddaughter, but she's great because she is my granddaughter, Catherine Kane, a very bright lady. And so we're going to be listening to what you plan for, along with Floyd, what you plan for the Democratic Party and what you see in this regional area. We've got the race for supervisor election down in Sarasota coming up. A very important race, and the history of the 32% of the Democrats in Sarasota and 36% in Manatee County isn't great as far as getting offices. Too many at-large elections in the county. The city elections are fine, but that doesn't get it done where the power is. So, Christine, where do you come down in all of this? Christine, are you there?
We had it.
Can you hear me?
We'll hear you now. Sure, go ahead.
Christine, before you start, why don't you identify yourself and tell us what your position is and explain what DEC stands for.
Okay, all right, that's a good idea. I'm Christine Jennings, and in February I was elected as chair of the Sarasota County Democratic Party. And the Democratic Party is at the top of the Democrats for our county, and we have four clubs underneath that.
Actually, Democratic Executive Committee, isn't it? Democratic Executive Committee?
Well, the DEC is made up of the precinct captains.
That is the executive committee.
Yes.
That's what Floyd was saying. I think what you're saying, Christine, is you charter the various clubs and things like that. So what are your plans as a new chair with the history that you've had to inherit? But your history, your own history, just to remind people who Christine Jennings is, you ran in a certain election that caused national attention. It was against Vern Buchanan, and you lost by how many votes?
369.
369. So here you have a Democrat, against all odds, doing tremendously well, and a questionable result came out of it. I think it was 18,000 disappeared ballots and things like that. Without going too much into that, Christine, with your abilities shown in the past as a candidate on your own two feet, what do you foresee for the local Democrats in Sarasota County? I'm up here, the show is up here in Manatees, but it's a regional situation. So what do you see for Democrats with the history?
Well, I will tell you, the executive committee, the officers, and our state committee man and state committee woman, we have been working really, really hard on setting some goals that we believe we can turn Sarasota blue in 2016. We believe that whoever the Democrat is for president, that we can get them elected in Sarasota County. And the way we're going to do that is by increasing the voter registration, by getting more people out to vote. Democrats are we're very bad about that, getting Democrats out to vote. Increase the vote by mail efforts. We're going to field really strong candidates that have good resumes and have the ability to raise money. So there's a lot of things that we're working on now.
And the money issue is what wins elections in Sarasota County, especially at the county level. You have five districts, and as an example of that, a man, Mr. Hines, who won, I think, the fifth district, I'm not sure, fourth or fifth. More people got votes than he did in his own district, but because you don't have single-member districts down there, everything's at large. The developers buy the election, and he lost the three people in his own district, yet he won the election because of his at-large status. So how will you change that?
Well, we're going to help them raise money, and I will tell you, as long as the candidates ask, the money is there.
Oh.
You just have to work hard at it, and really, really hard. This is not for wimps. Running for office is probably one of the hardest things you will ever do in your entire life, if you do it the right way.
Let me ask you a question, Christine.
This is Dennis Maley from the Braden New Times.
This has always been something that I've been disappointed in Democrats, especially here in Manatee County. You can tell me if you see a little bit of the same in Sarasota. And that is, there is a lot of Democratic money in both of these counties, meaning that, you know, you ran for Congress and you were able to raise a significant amount. So were some other congressional candidates. The presidential candidates have always done very, very well. Barack Obama has done very well in Sarasota when he's come down. It seems like there are a lot of wealthy liberals who will sign a very big check to get a picture with someone from the national scene, but it seems that they are not nearly as willing to support the grassroots Democratic candidates, on the lower level races. Do you see that as being a problem, and how do you plan to hopefully turn that around and open those wallets up for these smaller races?
You know, I sincerely do not think that is the problem. I think the problem is most candidates, the one thing they don't want to do is ask for money. And frankly, most people that work on their campaign teams don't want to ask for money. So the best thing they can do is get a professional who understands how to ask for money and let them help you as a candidate. But I can tell you, people absolutely want, if they're a Democrat, they want Democrats to win. You all know that we just won the two city elections here May 12th. And the two ladies running absolutely would sit on the phone and make phone calls, and they did raise the money that they needed. And that's one of the many reasons they won their races.
Dennis can come back to you with something, but I'm going to interject here. You got Sarasota City is about 55,000 people. The city of Venice is around the same number. And Northport, which is larger, 60-plus thousand. Between the three cities, you've got about 180,000 people of the 350,000 people in the county. Is the focus of the party going to be nailing down these cities to demonstrate the difference between the county governments and the city governments? Because what can happen, and I've recommended this to candidates, candidates in the past, is they can annex into the county, taking away some of the power of the county. Actually, the city of Sarasota could annex Siesta Key, believe it or not, because the water barriers no longer exist to separate the boundaries, and that is possible in that regard. But to think in terms of the city elections to build toward the county elections, what is that? How does that cross your mind?
I can honestly tell you, I've only been elected since February, and I really have not focused on that issue at all. I've focused on a lot of other issues, but I have not spent any time thinking about the annexation, to be honest.
Well, can I ask you, Christine, on that same note, though, where do you, being plugged into the Sarasota Democratic community, there is this very stark difference between the unincorporated area and the cities. The cities, you tend to have Democrats do very well, and in the unincorporated county, they do very poorly. What is it, do you think, that is, why are Democrats having a hard time connecting to people in these more rural areas?
I don't think we've spent the time that we need to. Mm-hmm. And it really, it is unfortunate, but to really get those votes, you really have to spend a lot of one-on-one time with people, and you have to do a lot of meet and greets. You have to work it, and I don't believe that Northport and these other areas that you've mentioned have been worked hard enough, and that is something that we are going to be doing. Particularly Northport. Northport is now larger than Sarasota, the city of Sarasota. And Northport, so we're going to spend a lot more time in Northport.
Well, that sounds like a plan. So what is your next event that you're going to plan for, Christine?
We have an event, and we actually had an event in Northport night before last, and meet and greet. And on the 30th, we have an event, a meet and greet in Venice. And we're doing these. We did one in Newtown last week. So we are really doing a lot of meet and greets, and we're very, very pleased with the number of people attending, especially for the summertime. But I will tell you, Democrats are charged up about 2016.
With the O'Malley thing coming up, and with Bernie Sanders' numbers getting closer to Hillary's numbers, the primary is going to get more and more important as time goes on.
Well, Democrats are charged up. With this meeting in Northport, it was exciting how many new, absolutely new people were there that we met. But 2016 is going to, Florida, as you know, will be the battleground state.
It's all of you. Oh, okay. There we go. We all right now? Okay. We're having a little trouble with every once in a while we have trouble with the technical equipment in this very advanced studio, Christine. So,
Christine, what about the state Democrats with the Democratic Party of the state being, for lack of a better word, neutered at this point? They have very little power or influence. How does that challenge a local Democratic Party, not having the winning team, so to speak, on your side in Tallahassee?
You know, I will be honest with you. This is what we have decided for us. All we can worry about and all we can focus on is Sarasota County. We have no authority. There's nothing we can do about any other county. Now, I will tell you, Cheryl Wilson and I have made an agreement that we're going to work closely together. I think she's going to be a breath of real fresh air for Manatee County. But I've learned is you just focus on what you can do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the state party, we talk to them, we work with them. I know that they're going to be putting out releasing a review of the 2014 elections and recommendations for the future. That's going to be coming out soon. But the truth is, if every county just focuses on their county, then I think we would have good results.
So even in the case of a congressional candidate, if you come up with one, which is a district situation, that would kind of compromise that idea, where do you come down in that regard, Christine?
We will focus on Sarasota County.
And that's really the right focus, Christine. That's some of the things I think we miss in Manatee County. Manatee County last election cycle, there were two great Democratic candidates who just got very, very little support in Michael Gallen and Terry Wunder. And these were, extreme, and Terry was one that really did everything right, was not afraid to ask
for money. She got 47% or something?
No, she lost by 18% of the vote.
Oh, 18%.
The problem is, though, that when you've got a situation where the numbers are that bad, the opportunity to for someone...
So she only got 32% of the vote?
Yeah. The opportunity for somebody to be competitive with Vern Buchanan right now is almost zero, even with a lot of money. So you really do have to build it on the grassroots level. You really do have to create more Democratic voters in order for that to change. You're not going to change it just with money. If you got a well-financed Democratic opponent for Vern Buchanan, it would still be extremely difficult with him being an incumbent now because of your voter registration demographics. But
I agree.
If you focus on getting more either people that don't know they're Democrats to become Democrats, or again, you know, I think too often we focus on this mythical undecided voter when we've got to remember there's about half the voters out there that don't even participate. That's a lot of people that hopefully can be reached and inspired and given a message on why they might find representation among one of the parties.
Christine, how many registered Democrats are there in Sarasota County, and how many registered voters, period, that are not Republican? What's the numbers?
I got to tell you, the other numbers are something like 75,000, and generally they lean, 60% of them lean Democratic. So in Sarasota County, it is very possible that, you know, we can do well, and we must have the independents to win. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you who's really helping us, and you know this, who's really helping us right now, and we will not let people forget it, is the current legislature.
Oh, they've done a wonderful job. Medicaid and they're praying and hoping that Obamacare will be ruled out by the Supreme Court. That is all in their wish list, except it may be to their demise if that happens.
I think there are so many Republicans that are intelligent, that are fed up with them. And you know what happened? We've lost our checks and balances. And many, and frankly, in Sarasota County, again, I'm only focusing on Sarasota County, we have so many intelligent people. Now, there's always a percentage that is just going to stay with their party, and that's all there is to it, but that's true of the Democrats, too. But there's a lot of thinking people in Sarasota County, and they are fed up with what is going on in Tallahassee.
Christine, our co-host here, Floyd, has been silent. Floyd at one time ran in the primary for the Democrats for the congressional seat.
And, Floyd Winter?
Floyd, yeah.
That's me, Christine.
That's oh, Floyd, my goodness, I just talked about you the other day.
There you go.
I have missed seeing you.
There you go. So then, well, this is all the more reason for you to call on a bi-weekly basis and into the show, and we can talk, and Floyd, as I said, is the co-host, so Floyd's got some thoughts, I'm sure. What are your considerations here, Floyd?
Yeah, how you doing? Christy and I ran against each other for the primary back in 2004, and that's when a person called Catherine Harris was out there, and Jan Snyder, C.J. Zaya. It was an expensive race. At that time, I think it was one of the most expensive races in U.S. In the United States as far as congressional races goes. Catherine Harris and Vern Buchanan have been able to raise that total way up each time. Christine's race against Vern Buchanan was very expensive and very controversial with the, 18,000 disappeared votes?
Yes.
Well, that was such a long, drawn-out thing that the disappointments. But, you know, of course, that raises the specter or the ghost that it may be repeated in this year's, this 2016 election, because Jeb was at the helm of what the Republicans were doing at the time of 2000 in the Gore v. Bush situation, and his history is questionable. When they announced that Gore had won the election, and they had a mic on Jeb, and Jeb says, "Oh, no way, that couldn't have happened." Well, he was right. They had rigged it. And there we have the nubbins of maybe a repeat of that. Will he get the cooperation of Mr. Scott? Gee, you wouldn't think that Mr. Scott would do something like that. I'm the man who took the Fifth Amendment 75 times in a vote in a Medicaid fraud situation. Nah, he wouldn't do that. But anyway, Christine, would love to have you on a regular basis. Can we have that promise?
I'd love to. So, yes, when I'm not on vacation, I'm going to be traveling some this summer. But when I'm not on vacation, you let me know when I can come on, Augie, and I'm happy to be there, okay?
Well, you just tell us when you want to come, let us know, and we want to have this conversation, because I think you offer an encouragement, I think, to Democrats because of your willingness to fight for what you deserve to be the congressman that we have not gotten. But maybe we'll get the party back where it needs to be, or maybe you'll get the party where you want it to be. In any event, we'll see the success that you can bring. Go ahead, Floyd. You want to
say? Christine, one of the key questions that I have for you is you acknowledge that Democrats have a harder time voting. There are more Democrats registered than Republicans throughout the state, and yet we don't come out to vote, especially in the off-year elections. What's your comments on that, and what are you trying to do to deal with that?
You know, and Charlie Crist, it was proven, just as you said, once again, Miami-Dade, Democrats didn't get out and vote, and Crist lost that election for the governor only by 65,000 votes. But, you know, it goes back to, this is my opinion, the state party just has to tell every county, focus on your own county, and you have to do grassroots. There is no other way to win unless you get voter registration up, get the voters out to vote, and work on vote by mail. And there's a lot of other things, but those are the three basics, and you can't get away from them.
Well, let's. When do you go out of town, Christine?
Let's see here. Let me go to my calendar. I'm going out of town over the weekend of the 4th, and then I'm going out of town the week of July 12th.
Well, let's just plan this. So when is the next early July? Can you make it before the 10th sometime?
I'm sure I can. Of course I can. I'll call you with the date. Is that all right?
That's fine, because I'm going out of town on the 10th.
So, I'm telling you, there's more people out of town right now than I wondered what's going on, but everyone's playing.
We had arguments the other day with people who were listening. We didn't realize how much they were listening, but we had almost a cat fight going on the last half hour of our show on Wednesday. So, Christine, this is delightful. Let me know what the good dates are for you, and we'll schedule it.
I will.
We want you back. Thanks so much for your input. It's a real insight. So,
thank you, gentlemen. Bye.
Bye now. Well, there we have Christine Jennings. I wasn't sure if she could make it. She's got a busy schedule, and you know, there we are. We've got another person in the studio right now, and
we're going to take
the break and come back to that individual. But if you want to call in 941-745-1490 and tell us what we don't have right now is a sound, and for some reason it's just all cut off. I don't know what's going on here. In any event, we have a sound on our phone.
Sarasota is home to a true gift, the Posture Clinic of Sarasota, with Dr. Mark D'Amato, 4450 South Tamiami Trail. Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor, treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet, and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients, too. This part of the Morning Edge is brought to you by Callens, Little, and Delgado, practicing personal injury, criminal defense, and family law. Call 941-749-1446.
941-749-1446. I may be crazy, but it just may be a lunatic you're looking for. Turn out the lights. Turn on the lights. We're back at the Morning Edge. I'm Floyd J. Winters, and in the studio is Dennis Maley, and here is Augie.
And also Catherine Kane, and here is Augie. Catherine's going to have some comments after we get into the Bremen Times and what Dennis has been talking about with the county board here. Mr. Chappie, there was a movie made by
him.
Yeah, and interesting parallel to what is rather bizarre and surreal. The man is really appointed to the job. What's the story on that, Dennis?
So we've got a county commissioner who's running for re-election in 2012, and he raises $78,000 and change for the race. Now, that's about par for the course in most county commission races if they're not countywide. You know, he has a district that incorporates most of western Manatee County with the islands and the village of Cortez. There was one very unique thing about Mr. Chappie's race, and that is he was unopposed. He had no opponent in either the primary or the general election, not even a write-in opponent. So that's a lot of money to raise.
$78,000, was it?
78 and change, yeah. So. Yeah. That's a lot of money for a race where you literally have no competition.
So did he have a pack, or what did he have?
No, and here's where things got interesting, is the FEC found probable cause for several counts that he violated statutes this week, and when you get done a race and you have all this money left, you are restricted to a couple things you can do with it. You can either fund an office account, which you put $10,000 into. You can then donate the rest to charity. But what you can't do is spend it on really anything else. But he had some very questionable expenditures at the end of his campaign, where he paid out three well-connected political operatives a total of just under $45,000 in what was like bonus money.
Ooh.
So
incentive money, huh?
Yeah. Well, you had direct payments to Political Inc., which is a local political consultant group, and then you had Linda Sink, who's another local political consultant. They each got $15,000 in winning bonuses. Now, sometimes...
What the hell is that?
Well, sometimes consultants have it in their contract where you pay them so much per month, and then if you win, you pay a bonus. And some of the other candidates did, but these were actually record winning bonuses for Andy Kelly. Nobody's ever paid $15,000, let alone to pay it to multiple people. Again, for a race that you couldn't do anything but win because you're the person in it. So it's very hard to say that anyone contributed to your victory unless they went out and, you know, intimidated people not to run against you. I'm not suggesting that happened. But so you have this money moving around. Then you have another real world payment. Remember, there's no real activity in the account. You know, he had there's money coming in, and then after that's done, he basically had a couple of dispersions. I think he had one for some event, you know, where he paid a caterer or something. The rest of it was just these bonuses. So a very inactive account, not a whole lot of paperwork compared to other accounts where they're buying commercial time, they're buying signs, they're buying radio time, they're buying all different kind of stuff. So he's paying his treasurer, which happens to be Eric Robinson, who most of the Sarasota listeners know. He's
running. Eric Robinson.
Yeah.
Yeah, his wife is on the county commission.
Correct. And then he is running for school board. He's already announced his candidacy in Sarasota County. So he is an accountant in, I believe he's also out of Venice. And so he's getting his $250 a month that he gets standardly from all these people that he functions as treasurer for. But then he gets another payment at the end from Chappie for just under $15,000, $14,700 and some dollars.
The bagman for this area used to be Mike Bennett.
Right. He was the guy that paid all the tax and, you know, collecting this much money.
He turned down the supervisor of elections when she ran for election at that time. Gave her no money, refused her money, because she was controversial at the time. So I'm just interjecting, is Chappie taking that role?
Well, I don't know what's happening, and that's the big question, is that there seems to be a very inexplicable flow of money into his account and then out to other people. So the questions that raises is, why is that happening and where's the money going afterwards? Now, you would have to have, let's say we said $100 an hour, you're looking at 3.5 to 4 weeks, 40-hour nonstop weeks of an accountant's services to generate that kind of cost. You know, when you look at some of the other accounts for county commission that he, or campaigns that he had also been treasurer for, You know, their total papers.
He also had been treasurer for, what is, I mean, he's been treasurer for what?
Oh, yeah. And here's where you get into the thick of it, Augie, is that you have basically what I like to call a team. And it doesn't matter if you're Democrat or Republic. You have a team of candidates, a slate, if you will, kind of like, you know, Tammany Hall days, where if you get the blessing, you get touched on the head, then the money will flow in from all the reliable sources, but then you are expected to hire all of the friendly faces, and you get the same political consultants, you get the same accountants, you get the same everything for your campaign, and it's sort of like the good old boy seal of approval. Once you have all these people, then the money starts to flow in even better. Once they find out you're working with Max Stevens, who's the political consultant, and Linda Sink, and that you've got a couple of big donations from these big developers, that kind of sends the signal up. The bat signal goes up and says, hey, this is one of our guys. You know, everything will be all right. And we've seen this before because Robinson's had relationships with a lot of the shadier individuals that have operated and managed them.
And his wife is tied into, what's the name of the big developer? I can't think of the name now, but it's a continual pipeline and daisy chain.
Right, and then if you remember the Bob Wachter scandal,
yep.
You know, they were tight, and then Wachter, now here's where it all gets really hairy, because if you're going to have a statute violation, say they found probable cause for FEC violations. You got to remember, FEC is civil. There's nothing criminal. They can't remove them from office. However, there are criminal codes in the election codes. So there are things.
Who would, if somebody selectively chose to go after
this? Who would it be? That's where the problem comes back.
Brodsky's not going to do that.
Brodsky
and
we saw that already, because Walker came in, got caught, hand in the cookie jar with election fraud, buying those prepaid
against
credit cards.
Against a fellow Republican.
Against it, right. Just embarrass him, buying prepaid credit cards, and then making donations.
Does that sound like Rubio to prepaid credit cards?
Making donations to Democrats in her name so they could be used to embarrass her. And again, what would they have done? They would have taken a last-second PAC ad. They would have, she made $500 contribution to Max contribution to Barack Obama, Max contribution to Keith Fitzgerald. These were all these donations that were made.
This is what seems to happen the weekend before the Tuesday election.
Right. So what did Brodsky do? Nothing. Gave him house arrest. Only charged on some of the counts. It was a very
turned it into a misdemeanor.
Yeah. Very soft walked prosecutor.
You've had a history with this district attorney, calling him a district attorney. He's a party man, first and foremost, because...
Well, he's got all the same people. Walker would work for him and raise money for him. You've got... you go up and down that campaign finance report, and you're going to see all the same donors. And you look in where the payouts are going, they're going to all the same consultants. They're on that team. They're on that slate. So when you have the state attorney, when you have members of law enforcement...
You've got the biggest thing you got in this whole thing, Bentley, who ran for, I think he ran for state district attorney at one time. He worked for Benderson. Mm-hmm. And Benderson is on, these guys are all on the payroll of Benderson one way or another, along with, who's the other guy down there? But anyway, all the big developers in Sarasota County are doing,
Pat
the
Neal,
developers,
right,
Pat
sure.
Neal are doing up here in Manatee. So you have, if you want to see a change, you can't have, when felonies are charged against the supervisor of elections, as in Sarasota County, when the McClatchy report came out and she put stacks of that report on to say that the machines were not a problem when they were, and the people were there to vote on that, that's interference with an election. That's a felony violation. Moreland at the time refused to bring forward. Well, the excuse was, well, she was just doing what her attorney said. Guess who her attorney was? Her husband.
Right.
I mean, this is insane stuff, but it's what happens when a party owns the...
Well, so we have, hopefully the door's been open.
Is Augie.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. While we're getting an overview here of our computers, rebelling.
Okay.
We've got a studio rebellion,
right,
of past shows.
So look, you've got a door open where you can say,
there you go.
Somebody's got caught with a finger in a cookie jar. We don't know what they've done yet, but they've broken the rules. So they found, they at least found there's probable cause on four counts of overpaying the inflated winning bonuses. They did not, and we don't have the full report, hasn't been redacted yet to be made public. We don't know why they didn't find the overpayment to Robinson probable cause yet, but they didn't. But they found at least four counts of it. So we're going to have to see what happens here.
Well, if the FEC is involved, it seems to me at some point with this kind of machination going on, somebody's got to appeal that the rights of voting rights and or override of the system is being created in such a way with Robinson and his wife and all the other stuff and the developers.
Well, if we don't argue, then we don't even have, we're not even pretending that it, that, that there's rules and regulations.
Right.
It devolves into a mafioso type run of the system where, you know, the money just comes in, we pick who the winners are, and that's it. And now, you know, Mr. Chappie is already filed to run again. He's got $35,000 in his account. He's got Robinson named as his treasurer again, and he's got no opponents so far in either race. So hopefully what comes out
of this... So it's really Robinson's bag, man.
Again, I don't know who,
I mean, if you're going to say the likelihood,
you got to remember, Robinson was that guy that, that when they had the anti-indigent healthcare fund, he was the one that was the head of that pack, and the money was flowing in through him.
When I did my television show, he was one of the first guests on the show, and at the time, I said, I cited all the falling registration numbers for the Republicans. They were at 58, they dropped to 43%. And he said, well, we don't care. We just want to win. And basically what he said was, we don't care how we win. We want to win. And people don't realize that the drive to win is built on the money. At large elections make that happen easily. And what happens in Sarasota County, the county government runs the show.
No, listen, a lot of it comes back to the voter, too. And that's why I always say, listen, we can sit around and cry the blues about the money and the bad guys.
Yeah.
But until people, how hard is it then to look at that team, to look at that slate, do a little bit of extra work, and D or R next to their name, look up who's funding their accounts, look up who they're hiring, and then you'll see if they're on that slate, if you will, chances are they are not working for the average person. They're working for that network of 100 or so people that, that profit off the way the wheels turn.
Well, you know, this thing floats right on to the top. I mean, the scum and the cream, they mix up and it gets very distasteful. The long and the short of it, when you have, we had a debate on Wednesday on the show here about the gridlock and the Congress and so forth. Well, the gridlock doesn't exist. The keys to the money are in the Congress. The Congress is run by the Republicans. And this county, this region is run by Republicans, and the developers in particular. So there can be no gridlock, and that was what the nature of the argument was there gridlock, and did the Democrats contribute to it? We've got Democrats who operate like Republicans. We've got rhinos, dinos, and everything else around here. How are you going to change any of that unless you reveal what happens and unless you make the changes?
We're revealing. Now we need the voters to go ahead and
Are they somnolent? Are they asleep? I mean, what's really going on?
I think so. I think you have people that aren't paying close enough attention, or they don't pay attention until it affects them directly. And it's too late. You know, we have time and again, you know, we had the Lakewood Ranch crowd come out for a land use meeting and say, oh, they're building the you know, seven-story apartment out there. This isn't the community we bought into. And we brought two buses full of people. We're going to turn them away. And the commission basically, they laughed in their face. And these people were shocked. How dare they? And it was a month after the election. And I said, you know, there it is, Lakewood Ranch. Thanks for finally coming out. But you guys just sent two Republicans back to the board, overwhelmingly one out there in the East County. They're the ones that told you, you know, go away.
You know, the habit of the Democrats is they're the party of the should-bes. Life should be better than it is, and it isn't fair. So it should be different than that, and it should do this, it should do that, it should do the other things. And if everybody understood things like we understand things, then it should be right, shouldn't it? And this is a mantra that runs through. And when it goes wrong, well, it should have not done that, but it did. You know, if Kerry hadn't conceded within 4 hours of knowing that the votes were missing, 200,000 votes, and had gone over to from Ohio to Tennessee and came back again the next day, if he had held out in the day, he should have won, and he would have won. So the should-be thing is where I think the weakness is. When you talk to people, well, it's those damn Republicans, it's their fault. And the indifference, the apathy, the willingness, I mean, you heard Christine talk about the willingness to work or not work, at the heart of what she's dealing with within that party down there, I'm sure is happening up here to some extent in Manitoba.
Without question.
You know, so you have this thing with Chappie, puts a question as to with Robertson involved, is it really the odors get rather.
So will somebody run against him? Will somebody jump into those waters? And then will people support them if they do?
Against Chappie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's he going to run for again?
That is the Manatee County Commission.
But he got the seat. He got placed in the seat, and now.
Well, he had it, and then he went unopposed. He won it, then he went unopposed the next time. Now he's unopposed this time.
Mm-hmm. So how long do they have to run against him?
Well, it's not until November 16th, so the qualifying isn't until next year. So there's plenty of time.
All this time, wow. Dennis, you surprised me a little bit. You indicated you were not aware of what happened in Charleston. What happened in South Carolina?
I was brought up to speed. Again, Wednesday night we work on our Thursday recap, which is a big job for a small local paper. So no, we're not monitoring the national news lines at that point. We're a hyper local paper, but I was brought up to speed by your beautiful and intelligent granddaughter, who is great. And who I found out, she doesn't even wear makeup, Augie. She's that gorgeous, and she doesn't even have makeup on this early in the morning. I mean, that is absolutely insane. Other girls are going to hate her when they hear that, but it's true. I can see that.
That is the problem, isn't it? But she has got a brain to go with those looks.
She absolutely does. She is going to be a full plate for any guy lucky enough to even try to live up to that.
She's going to get bored easily.
Yes, this is true.
Unfortunately, too many times, I'm sure. Catherine, we were talking about something on the way up here, and it had to do with the issue of what happened in North Carolina. And, you know, when black people do the killing, they're called thugs, and when white people do the killing, well, they're mentally ill, and they're not terrorists, and so forth. And this young man, his name being Dylan Stormroof, R-O-O-F, I think Roof for being not a bad-looking kid. He looks like he would have come out of the Mennonite tradition or something like that. But his father gave him a .45-caliber pistol for his 21st birthday. And he managed to use that on the nine people, and he sat next to for 1 hour in Charleston in the Marie. I'm trying to think of the name of the. Let me see if I can pull this up here. The Baptist church there. In any event, he shot the minister first when he got up to make his speech, and he went and shot others. The Emmanuel AME Church, a historic black church in downtown Charleston, that is a stone's throw from the office of the College of Charleston. This is an article written by Patricia Williams of Lasani. I made my son turn from his show that he was watching on television to the news coverage. We stayed up and discussed what had happened. I prayed that I didn't know anyone who had died, but I did. Today, Charleston, nicknamed the Holy City, is in mourning. We are still dealing with last month's shooting of an unarmed black man in northern suburbs. And in the hours since this latest shooting, many of us in the African-American community were left asking, is there any sanctuary left? If you're not safe, if a black person is not safe in their church, then where is he safe? So, Catherine, what are your thoughts on some of this?
I mean, I think that it's especially relevant today because I recently learned that today is actually what's known as Juneteenth. It's a day that commemorates the abolition of slavery. So this is, I mean, it sort of makes the black
lives... actually, not July 4th.
Today is Juneteenth, right, which is sort of a conjunction of June and 19th. So it just, it celebrates the, or not really celebrates, but commemorates the abolition of slavery. That's something I learned very recently. And I think that's especially pertinent as we face over and over again the racial turmoil that happens in our country. And it plays out in very violent and unsettling ways. I think there's no question that this young man engaged in an act that could be easily considered terrorism. But again, because he's white and he has the sort of privilege that you do in this country, in this world, when you are born with a certain color of skin, there's so many people who have said, oh, well, he's mentally ill. Well, that's not it. He was certainly acting in a sort of racial way. I mean, he was filled with hate. He made statements prior to the shooting which, I mean, completely confirmed that he was acting in a way that was a racial bias. It's terrifying.
He announced as he was shooting, "I'm doing this." They told him, the minister said, don't keep doing this. There were two ministers who were shot. And they basically said, don't. You don't need to do this. And he says, yes, I do. You people are taking over. You're raping our women, and you're taking over, and something to that effect. And he kept reloading and kept shooting with his .45. And a .45 will blow you away. I mean, the caliber is pretty heavy bullet. And if you've ever fired one, it takes a good, strong arm and a lot of practice to manage that weapon. In any event, he did it, and he did it willfully. What I'm wondering about, who his mentors were. You've got to be carefully taught to love and hate, and his father gave him that kind of weapon.
Well, Catherine and I talked about this a little bit before the show, and I think one of the things you're seeing now, Time Magazine ran that cover a couple weeks ago, and they said 1968, and they scratched it out and said 2015. My son and I watched Selma a few weeks ago, and it was eerie to watch it amid the backdrop and to see how little progress that we've made in so many ways. And I think what you're seeing is the release of a lot of pent-up racism that was maybe repressed by a period where it was more socially unacceptable. And I think part of the thing that is enabling that is high-speed internet and the technology of people to communicate. It has never been as possible before to insulate yourself in a vacuum and only hear and only seek out opinions that seem to validate yourself. So you can get 100,000 people that feel a certain way together, echoing it in the chamber. And I think it gives people the false sense that we're divided on this. When 100,000 out of a half a billion isn't a division, it's a small, abject minority. But when you look at it, there's clearly a tremendous amount of hatred that we have not dealt with, that we're not dealing with, that is maybe was just beneath the surface for a time period, and now I think people are starting to see I'm more like-minded, and I think that's the problem. Is that I'm sure, Augie, if we trolled the websites today, I am certain we could find 100,000 people saying something to the effect of good, you know.
I'm glad this happened.
Yeah. We've seen that in all of the other ones.
Well, the bombing of the churches and so on and so forth.
Well, and the difference, though, is that you only heard back then in the bombing of Selma what your neighbors said, mm-hmm. right? Because, and then you had the networks, and that was it. Today you have the means for hatred to spread so incredibly quickly that...
You're touching on is what I've said. I was watching Donald Trump, and I said, boy, this echoes Martin Goebbels. This guy puts out lies left and right, mm-hmm. but he does it in a charming, don't you know, didn't you know, what's wrong? And he gets cheers from an audience that's more ignorant than he
right.
is. When you combine someone like him and an ideologue like Cruz, if those two were to combine under some kind of an effort, the Nazis did this with 250 people. They shut down a 65 million people population and turned them into, from a very intelligent group of people who were enmeshed in economic turmoil from the Depression and on before, and the inflation of their money, or deflation of the money, to something that became a war machine overnight, literally, within he became chancellor.
Well, and you see echoes of that, because remember Goebbels talking about the idea of you create fear, you identify the fear, and you assign it to someone, so you assign it to the Jews. When you have this man making calls that you're taking over, walking into a lower-income African-American church as if they're repressing him, they're taking over. If anyone's paying attention in the United States of America and thinks that the African-American population is taking over in any way, I don't think they're watching closely enough. But when you look at it, clearly there's this idea among a lot of the subsets of the repressed that it's someone else among you, someone else down here with their boot on your neck. And if you can keep,
The other thing, I'm just interjecting, nothing more, and that is the willingness to say he's incompetent. He's leading from behind, and he that they're referring to is Obama. And, of course, they won't say, and he's black.
Right.
And I think
that is thinly veiled in all of these compliments. You hear that. But the reality is that you've got a situation where these people on all sides are looking to other poor, you know, majority people and saying, you know, these are the people who are keeping us down. It's an illegal immigrant in the field somewhere working for, you know, pennies on the dollar. It's, you know, an African-American person, you know, collecting a food stamp or something like that, even though more white people collect food stamps. It's this person with that's who's keeping me down from getting where I want. And they're not looking up and saying it's that guy on Wall Street managing a hedge fund or that guy shipping all the jobs out to, you know, to other countries.
But the problem, Dennis, is do people really read? Do they inform themselves?
Well, more than ever today, you can read things that only confirm your biases. Well, you can find that all day long.
The other night, last night, I watched Geraldo, and they had a line of people, white, black, but they had one young black man in the middle of two white couples, and he was asking, what do we do about this situation in Charleston? Well, no church is safe. We're not safe anymore. Just white people. So he didn't say, in your white church, or do you attend the black church? He didn't do that. And then he came to the black guy, and the guy says, well, we're never safe. I can't honestly. Well,
here's an interesting story.
Well, let me finish my point a second, then you can reject. And so then he wouldn't agree with Geraldo. His premise is that it's all churches, it's just a safe thing for everyone. And then the white couple on the other side did what the other one did, as if they were part of this. They really weren't part of it. And that was a false nonsense that Fox does. Go ahead, Troy.
Yeah, Augie, I'm kind of agreeing with you and chiming in what you're saying. In recent years, we've had church shootings, theater shootings, elementary school shootings, people attacking police barracks. As the stats shows that between 2011 and 2013, there was a mass shooting in the United States every 64 days. Now, going back before that time, before, in a sense, the Internet became so popular, it was every 200 days. So it's almost tripled as far as what we're having. And Dennis made a comment about people going to Internet and now being able to glom onto all these people with the same basic idea, reinforcing your crazy notions that you have.
I'm right, and a lot of other people agree with me. Yeah. There's a great quote here in one of the stories covering it. Edward Johnson, an African-American pastor at New Vision Cathedral in Lincolnville, South Carolina, nearby, said that the definition of race must be changed across the United States to really begin to prevent the hatred to lead to violent acts like Wednesday's. After 400 years in America, he said, we are not African-Americans, we are not black Americans, we are Americans across the board. Reverend Johnson, 68. We have to address what race is, because what we're calling race right now is a lie. It's evil, and that's true. You know, if we haven't gotten to the point where we realize that the difference between an African-American and a Caucasian and what we call Latino and American invention itself is almost nothing. When you look at it...
There's, I think, 75% of blacks at one time some years ago were considered had white blood in them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the bias is if you've got black blood, you're black. Any small smidgen, you're
black.
Well,
again, we look at the president. The president is
exactly
black.
Exactly. So, and that's exactly what the Nazis did. If you were any part Jew, you were Jew, and you were targeted. And this becomes the focal point. So we have a caller.
Yes, John says about 30 seconds, and John, that's all we have because we're winding up here in the morning. It's John. You're live.
Well, first of all, this was just an amazing show with Jennings, and you got Maley in, and your granddaughter. Fabulous book out in 2013, 2014. I thought it was the best book of the year. It's called Dog Whistle Politics by Eon Lopez, L-O-P-E-Z. How coded racial appeals have reinvented racism and wrecked the middle class. He's a professor out of a Southern California university, and it's just an amazing book. He tracks from the 60s to the 70s and 80s when Lee Atwater started to say you can't say the N-word anymore, you have to say welfare payments, government is bad, and he tracks it all the way through the 2012 election. And I'm just reminded how, look at the irony, how this young man gets up and says you're raping our women before he shoots these nine people, and then the day before you've got Donald Trump accusing Mexicans of coming across the border to rape our women.
Exactly.
Yeah, thank you very much, John.
That is exactly what I was going to say. John took the words right out of my mouth. Here's Trump up there doing what I would consider a Goebbels a routine of splashing all the enmity you can on a group of people, and mainly Hispanics. But you got the kid doing the same thing, though they pick and choose who their victims are, and then they act upon their bias.
And it's women, it's police, it's school kids, and we've lost John. And Dennis, you want to sum up what we have for the today?
Well, you know, I think when you look at it and you see that the low-hanging fruit is always the easiest thing for the minority to control the majority with. And as long as you can keep the masses of poor people fighting amongst themselves about which other group of poor people has their boot on their neck, they'll never look up to see who's actually wearing the shoe.
The plantation owners did that very successfully. If you don't want to lose your job and the nigger's going to take it, well, we'll give the nigger your job, and the white boys better come in too. And don't complain about your lousy education system, because we run it. And that's what you get. And this is the outcome. And this is another example of that. A father giving a 45 caliber weapon to his son for his 21st birthday. Wow.
And that winds us up. Thank you very much for listening to this week on the Morning Edge.
WPR, Bradenton, Sarasota, Tampa Bay. Wasn't hurt.